Good afternoon. Welcome in to the first full off-season edition of State of the Tigers, our weekly show here at PowerMizzou.com, brought to you by our friend James Carlton at State Farm Insurance. You can find James on the internet at CarltonInsurance.net. He's on Facebook at Facebook.com/CarltonInsurance. You can call him at 314-961-4800. I don't know his address. You can probably write him a letter. I do know his cell phone number. I'm not going to give you that, so you can text him, but get in touch with James. He will cut you the best deal he can do on your insurance. He's going to talk to you a little bit about Mizzou sports, about some NIL opportunities that he's managed to line up that you might be able to help with. Encourage you to do all of that. We are getting into prime talking about NIL season. It is the portal season for Missouri basketball, soon to be Missouri football as well. We'll have Gerard Hamilton momentarily, but we start with Drew King. Drew, the portal is open. It is already flowing both directions for Missouri basketball, some of which I think we expected, some of which we certainly did not expect, at least not on Monday or Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, who could have seen Mabor Majak leaving Dennis Gates after all this time?
Yeah.
Like you said, I think some of this was expected. We knew that with a big freshman class coming in and the number of needs that Mizzou had, you knew that there was going to be a lot of roster turnover coming into this offseason. And they've already gotten off to a pretty prolific start with Kurt Lewis, Jesus Carrillero Martin, and Mabor Majak going into the portal, and then Dennis Gates fishing out Jacob Cruz from Tennessee Martin as his first pickup of the summer. And so,
need to be clear, to my knowledge at this point, Jesus Carrillero Martin is not officially in the portal. We have reported that it's going to happen. I fully expect it's going to happen. The process for the portal, and I understand this is new for everybody still. And by the way, if you guys have questions, comments, feel free to put them in the queue there. We will get to them as the show goes along. But the way this works is a player to go into the portal has to submit paperwork through the compliance office at the school. Once that paperwork is in, usually within 48 hours, that player is then officially in the transfer portal. Kurt Lewis and Mabor Majak are officially in the portal. To my knowledge, Jesus Carrillero Martin is not, but I have had sources, I believe, tell me that he is going to go in. So we are operating as if he is, you know, going to be in the portal probably within a matter of about 24 hours. We'll deal with the outgoing stuff first, but Drew, you talked to Jacob Cruz yesterday, and again, not the guy we expected to be the first one. Obviously a priority for Missouri because he was on campus yesterday on an official visit, which was the first day that was allowed.
Yeah, I mean, they made quick work, right? That this was a guy they pretty clearly wanted to get. Cruz had been contacted by a ton of different high major programs. I listed all of the ones from the SEC yesterday, but, like, you know, Ole Miss, I'm pretty sure, was one of them. Oklahoma, which will be an SEC program, reached out to him. Like, it was nearly two dozen different teams that had shown interest. So for Mizzou to get him early, I think, was a pretty big pickup for them. And I will dig into the numbers a little bit deeper in my column tomorrow. But you think about what Jacob Cruz brings to the table that the three guys who just left didn't. He's scored more points per game at the D1 level than any of those guys. He gets more rebounds per game than any one of those guys. He shoots a higher percentage from three than any of those guys. Aside from Mabor, he's taller than Jesus and Kurt Lewis. Like, this is a guy who checks a lot of boxes as far as upgrades that Missouri needs. And in my piece about what Mizzou should look for in the transfer portal, one of them was they needed a volume scorer. And a guy that averaged 19 points a game, shooting as high of a field goal percentage as Jacob Cruz did, like, that was a need, right? It might not be the position of need, but it's a need nonetheless.
Right, and let's be clear. The reservation here is, okay, he did it in the Atlantic Sun.
Right.
That translate to the SEC.
Well, it's OVC, Gabe.
OVC, my bad. Yeah, I don't know where I came. I've had the Atlantic Sun stuck in my head a lot the last couple of days. I don't really know why. I couldn't name one team that's in it. But he did it in the Ohio Valley, which, it's not the SEC, right? So I don't know that anybody expects 19-8 out of him next year, but he doesn't need 19-8. The worry I have is, we've seen some of these 3-point percentage numbers, whether it's Connor Vanover at Oral Roberts, whether it's Kurt Lewis and Sean East in junior college. You know, sometimes when you're jumping up a level and playing more athletic defenses, 41% can become 31% in a hurry. So that's my only concern. But look, I said all along, whoever he signs. That's his decision. He's the coach. I'm not going to judge good, bad, or indifferent until I see him play. I'm just saying, if you have a concern, that's the concern. But the fact they got him day one, look, this is a guy they want, right? And that's always, to me, the kind of bar I'm going to set. If you're taking guys that were like your 15th visit out of the portal and it's early June, then you've missed a lot of dudes. And that was clearly a plan C, D, or E. This is plan A. Now, whether plan A is right or not, I don't know, but he got plan A.
Right. And, you know, I could see it being kind of like high school recruiting too, where you just needed to get the ball rolling again, right? And get some positive attention back on the program. And I think that maybe more players out of the portal will take notice, like, oh, they got Jacob Cruz already. Like, let me go see what's happening at Missouri. So, yeah, I think that was an important first step for Dennis Gates in this offseason. Because also one of the things that I've seen, like, with these transfer rankings lists, like, Jacob Cruz is pretty consistently in the top 10. Like, I think that this is a guy that, like we already mentioned, a lot of programs were interested in getting. So it's a pretty big win for Dennis Gates early on here.
Right. And keep in mind, as far as rankings go, like, these include no one that's in the NCAA tournament.
Correct. Yet,
because those teams are still playing. So, but hey, better to be in the top 10 than not be in the top 10, certainly. So we've got a couple questions on Cruz that I want to hit. Then we'll kind of deal with more of what's going out and what's still left. Ron Davis, do you expect Cruz to be the big fish of the transfer class or a supplemental piece? I don't know. Is he the best player Missouri ends up signing? He's probably in the conversation. I think that's up to, like, beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, so I think that he's probably a piece. I don't know that if Missouri wants to get where it's going, he can be the piece, right? Because you know, they still have some pretty big roster position holes to fill, right? They still really need a point guard, and they still really need a big man to come in and help with the rebounding and the facilitating. So, I think that he's a really good player. I don't know that he's going to be, like, your best player on a winning team at the SEC level. Although, like, I could be totally wrong, right? Like, Dalton Knecht made the jump from Northern Colorado last year. It did not see that coming. So, you never know.
Yeah. Magic Man says, rumor is that Cruz NIL is worth around $400,000. So before we go any further, I've seen this like two or three times. I have no idea where it's coming from. Like, I don't know who said this. So I don't know whether I put any – well, no, I don't put any stock in it. I have no idea how much money Jacob Cruz is going to make this year, nor do I care.
Right.
It's not my money. But, like, do you know where that's even coming from?
I haven't seen anything other than people on the board repeating it. But
right. And that's the thing. Once it's on the internet, it's fact.
Right.
Right. So it will be – after the show, it will be on Twitter – that Jacob Cruz is making $400,000 to play at Missouri next year. Maybe he is. I don't have any idea. I don't know. But do you think they can afford Javon Porter? Look, guys, Missouri's NIL better be a whole hell of a lot more than $400,000 for this roster, or it's not going to work. Like, that's not going to be competitive in a high major conference.
Right. I saw a story, and I'll have to go find it later, but it was like a coach being quoted saying, you can't fill a starting lineup with $1 million anymore. Like, it's
right. It takes about $2 million for a starting five. I saw that quote.
So, I mean, I would expect it to be Mizzou's NIL funds to be higher than $400,000.
Yeah, so we'll get to a little bit more of the Javon Porter stuff momentarily. But, these conversations are really one and the same. It's what's coming in and what's going out. They're related. So you and I were texting yesterday. My initial thought was probably three or four guys in the portal. Once I saw Jacob Cruz as the first, I'm absolutely going at least four guys in the portal. I don't think there's any question about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, because we mentioned Javon Porter. He's also a guy that maybe not necessarily a positional need, right? So if you're bringing in Cruz.
But hang on real quick, though. Yeah. If the whole idea of this Florida State system is positionless basketball, like 6'6", 6'10", they're all somewhere in that range. I don't care if you play them at the 2, 3, or 4. Whatever. Just get tall, athletic dudes.
Sure, but you do need like a real point guard, and you do need like a heavyweight center, right? And so if we're going to talk about Cruz coming in and you're getting a point guard and a center, whether that's Javon Porter or not, like that's at least four guys that have to come off of scholarship, whether that means going into the portal or going on kind of an NIL-funded non-scholarship spot like Caleb Brown and Mabor Majab did last year. So, like with just Kurt Lewis and just Jesus in there, we're looking at least two more guys that have to take that step. And that's going to be kind of the biggest question going into the offseason is which guys is it going to be?
Yeah. And tomorrow, I mean, I think we'll have those answers within a week, maybe two at the most, but Tamar Bates told you the night of the loss to Georgia in the SEC tournament, basically that he's coming back. He's not going to transfer anymore. So we know that. So what we're down to at this point is Aiden Shaw, the three freshmen, John Tanjay, and Caleb Grill. I'm pretty confident Caleb Grill's back next year. If he wasn't, he would have played.
I agree.
I think they want John Tanjay back. I'm a little less certain how that works out. I could see Tanjay saying, hey, I'm going to go try it somewhere else. But, I think they want him back. So those two guys, whether it's on scholarship or NIL, we expect. So theoretically, both those guys could come back on NIL deals, and then nobody else has to leave if you want to add three more guys. So it is possible. But we're really looking at Aiden Shaw and the three freshmen. So if I set the number at 1.5 out of that group or four, are you over or under on the number of guys that transfers out?
I lean over, but I have no idea who it would
be. Don't
know
who.
Yeah. But it's really comes down to, like, after the year they just had, Dennis Gates has to win next season. Right. And so when you look at guys who are most ready to help this team win, I think Caleb Grill, number one, right? We've seen him have really good games, or not really good, but we've seen him be a contributor.
He's produced at this level.
Yeah. Right. Tanjay, we didn't necessarily see it last year, but he's done it at the D1 level before. We saw he was pretty clearly not at 100% healthy last year. So I feel a little bit more confident that he can turn things around. The freshmen, like Jordan Butler, had some nice starts. Anthony Robinson had some nice games defensively. Trent Pierce, we really never saw it with him. And then same thing with Aiden Shaw. It's like you have some good nights, and then the next night you didn't do anything. So it's tough to know which guys that you can for sure count on. And so that's why if I'm Dennis Gates, like I'm not – too concerned over who it's going to be. I just need guys that can win, that can help me win next year.
Right. I mean, Anthony Robinson averaged 3.9 points, 1.7 rebounds, and one assist a game. Aiden Shaw was 3.6 points, 3.8 rebounds. Jordan Butler was 2 points, 1.9 rebounds. And Trent Pierce appears in that, like, didn't play enough to be relevant on KenPom, so that's the thing. There's not a, out of those four guys, if he wants to bring them all back and he thinks they can be contributors, fine. Again, it's his $4 million job on the line. That's his call. I'm not going to argue with him. But none of those guys did anything that tells me I have to bring this guy back because he's a contributor on an NCAA tournament team next year.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, Gabe, if we talk about him adding three more guys on top of Jacob Cruz, right, if he's going to take
what we expect, yeah.
Yeah, like Javon Porter plus a point guard plus a real center, like that means three more guys have to go, right? That means like you're looking at Shaw and potentially two freshmen heading out.
No, it means two because right now they're at 12.
Okay.
I think.
No, because
you might be right.
Because they've got five freshmen coming in. That's the real issue here.
You might be right.
They've got a huge signing class that they're going to bank on. So, yeah, like I think that we need to expect a lot more movement in the next couple of days. Like it is far from finished. Yeah.
Yeah, because look, we feel pretty good about the Javon Porter situation. Not sure on Terrace Reed. Like I know I'm confident saying Missouri will pursue him. Don't know if they'll get him or not, but they're going to get someone with size.
Mm-hmm.
And they are absolutely 100% adding a point guard in the portal. Like there is no way they get through this and don't add a point guard.
Yeah. And so that's three more guys. Mm-hmm. That would put you at 16 scholarships for next season.
I mean, Dennis already told us he wants 26 dudes on the roster.
Which I wouldn't be shocked if he gets to, right? Like, so if you can convince both Tanjay and Grill to take that NIL deal rather than a scholarship, then you only lose two guys to the portal. But that's not a guarantee.
Right.
So, yeah, that's kind of the roster crunch right now. That's something that they got to figure out.
Yeah, so the numbers always work out. He'll figure it out. But, you know, that's kind of where we're at. Sam says, I wonder what kind of conversations Coach Gates had to have with the guys transferring out. I don't think it's real complex. It's, we were 0-19. I need your roster spot. We'll help you find a place to play. Appreciate everything you've done.
Yeah.
I think that's about it, man.
We think that you would be better suited finding somewhere else to play.
Right. Yeah. If you want to stay here, you're welcome to stay here, but you're not going to play and you don't have a scholarship. Now, I'm sure he found a nicer way to say it than that, but that's the gist of it. And look, especially in the NIL era, that's okay. Like, that's one of the things I really like about this is we're just upfront and honest about the stuff that's always been happening. Mm-hmm. Like, coaches have always had these meetings and these conversations with kids. It's just now we say it out loud.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the reality of it. And it's going to continue to move in that direction, too. What's the team? Dartmouth. Dartmouth is about to start, like, a whole labor union.
Right, which, by the way, the school said the other day, we will not negotiate with them.
Yeah, like, so that's great for Dartmouth.
Right. I'm not sure, like, maybe if it was Duke or something, it would have carried a little more weight. I'm not sure Dartmouth basketball. Well, I'm not sure Dartmouth cares if they play basketball.
Here's the thing, though, Gabe, is like because Dartmouth was able to pull it off, it opens the door for all the private schools to do the same, right? So we might not be very far away from Duke saying, let's start a union, right? Yeah. And then, like, it's going to open the floodgates. Yeah. So it's going to be very interesting the next couple of years here.
Sean wants to know how real of a possibility is it that Gates adds some guys with serious size through the portal and not just a Connor Vanham. Like, he's got to add better players. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah. You mentioned Terrace Reed earlier. He's, you know, 6'11", 265. He'd be the heaviest player that has ever played for Dennis Gates at Missouri yet.
He won't even be the heaviest player on next year's team, though.
Who would?
Right?
Who?
Is Peyton Marshall under 265?
That's true. That's
now?
A good point. Yeah. No, great point, Gabe. Like, okay, so there you go. That's two guys that would be significantly heavier than Connor Vanover.
Right. And like, in all seriousness, though, that was one of the problems with this year's team is you just looked out there and go, these dudes turn sideways and they disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no strength, no bulk there.
When Dennis Gates talked about Mabor Majag being our most physical defender, it's because he's 245 pounds. Like he can actually hold up against some of the SEC bigs. And I went through and I
And 245 pounds when you're 7'2 is still not bulky.
Correct. I went through and took the average height and weight of every starting center in the SEC, and it's 6'10 and a half and 244 pounds. So Mabor was average as an SEC center weight-wise, right? And he was the heaviest guy on the team. Everybody else was under that. So I think that that's a huge, huge need this offseason when they look at bigs. And I think that Terrace Reed is somebody who would make them a little bit bulkier.
Yeah, like that profile, whether it's Terrace Reed or somebody else, that's just the name we know is out there right now. But certainly, I know you can't say, but should I feel good about Mizzou transfer news? Look, I don't know how to you feel how you want to feel. Like Eli Drinkwitz said, I can't control your feelings. I can't manage your feelings, I think he said. I don't know. I did laugh, though, because like I said, this was how it was going to go. We're one transfer in, and you tell them we're back up, Drew. Here we go, baby.
Oh, man. I mean, they'll get guys. Like, they got one already. They'll get a couple of more, and then we'll find out in November whether it was something worth getting excited about or not, right? Like,
yeah.
Because I think there were a lot of people who were excited about Connor Vanover because Mizzou finally got a big man, and it didn't necessarily pan out all that well.
Can we say they got a tall man?
Yes.
I don't know that they got a big man. All right, Keegan wants to know, Drew, who's your ideal portal haul if you can have anybody on the roster?
Oh, man, that's a great question. So, yeah, go ahead.
Like, first of all, realize that there's dudes that are going to be in the portal that we don't know.
Right. So, yeah, that's a good point. So if I put it in hypothetical terms, right, not necessarily naming anyone specific, but I mentioned this in my article about what they need in the portal, right? They have to get a point guard, an experienced point guard who knows how to run an offense. Preferably can also be a volume scorer, right? Because you want that extra scoring punch in the backcourt there. And then you need size and strength in the front court, right? Whether that's Terrace Reed or another guy. I saw like Amari Williams is somebody that they've been connected to. He's also, you know, 6'10", 265. Like, you just need somebody that has that extra weight that can bang in the post with some of these SEC bigs. Because Mizzou really wasn't able to. So I think those would be like the two key players that I would look for in the portal.
All right, I'll do a little more. I will go specific names.
Okay.
I want Reed Shepherd to enter the portal and transfer to Missouri.
He's a lottery pick.
Dickinson to enter the transfer portal and transfer to Missouri. And then give me the best point guard in America. That's the idea. He just said ideal portal haul. He said nothing about realistic.
That's
those are the three dudes I want.
I mean, Reed Shepherd could be a point guard, but
yeah. But all right. So tournaments start. Well, I guess it started last night.
The playing games.
You apparently watched Colorado State, Virginia.
I watched the replay.
Yourself.
I watched the replay. I was on the treadmill and the game was on.
I did not. I also did not watch Wagner and Howard. I don't have any particular desire to watch whatever the play-in games are tonight because that's not the tournament to me.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you looking forward to in this tournament? You looked at the bracket. What's kind of, hey man, this is what I want to see.
To me, what I think is exciting about this year is among like the very top teams, there's no one that you feel for sure confident about, right? It's a lot of teams that have betrayed your confidence before, right? Purdue just came off of losing to a 16 seed last year, right? Houston pretty often comes up short in the tournament. UConn, like, there hadn't been a repeat champion in a really, really long time. Even like North Carolina is number 9 in KenPom right now. So of all the one seeds, like, I don't feel super confident that any of them can get there. And in this transfer portal era where there's kind of been an evening of the playing fields, you're seeing a lot more big upsets. So those are kind of what make March like the most fun to me, is just pure chaos. That's what I really root for, right? I either want my bracket to be perfect, and then once there's like one game that messes it up, I just want total anarchy where you get more 15 seeds being 2 seeds. So that's what I'm expecting, is just pure chaos out of this bracket.
I root for the underdog in every single game. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how I want it to go. And sometimes I'll switch who I'm rooting for in the game based on who might be the underdog at that specific time. So, all right, we'll do kind of rapid fire. First here, my very first impression looking at the bracket, the game of the tournament is going to be Sweet 16 in the East Regional, Connecticut against Auburn. That is criminal against both teams. Auburn should not be a 4 seed.
No.
UConn should not have to play Auburn in the Sweet 16. But I've got Auburn in the Final Four, but that's the game I'm looking forward to more than any other game in the tournament, which means that Auburn will lose to Yale.
No, well, and we're in agreement, too. I also have Auburn in my Final Four. But, I think that there has never been more evidence that conference tournaments don't matter to the selection committee, because I don't know how in the world you put Auburn as a 4 seed after the run that they just went on. I think that that's pretty criminal for them to be a 4 seed. I feel not super confident about UConn in the second round, right? Because if they go up against FAU, you know the Owls are going to try to get their vengeance after last season. So I still have UConn getting by there, but I don't love their chances of making it to the Elite Eight. So, yeah, like that's absolutely like a spot in the bracket that has me intrigued for sure.
Right. Okay, so I don't know if you know this off the top of your head. I've got one that I know I have in the Sweet 16. Give me a double-digit seed that's in the Sweet 16.
Oh, okay. I was really proud of this pick. I've got Colorado State in the Sweet 16.
Beating Texas and Tennessee, huh?
That's correct. So let me tell you why. Number one, every year, one of the play-in teams makes it to the Sweet 16. Since they expanded to 68 teams, one of the play-in teams.
Including Conzo Martin at Tennessee 1 year. Yeah.
There we go. Number two, Texas is kind of an extreme team where they're top 20 in offense and outside of the top 50 in defense. Those teams typically, I think they have like a 10% chance of making it to the Sweet 16. So I don't love Texas's chances of going very far. And then lastly, like Rick Barnes just doesn't go very far in the tournament ever. Like, when's the last time he made an Elite Eight? I think he was at Texas. So I have Colorado State beating both Texas and Tennessee this March.
Okay. Brock points out Caleb Love against Carolina in the Elite Eight. I'm now rooting for that. My double-digit seed in the Sweet 16 is Tennessee to Drake. I don't really know why. I just picked him because I was like, yeah, I think Drake will beat. I don't even know who they're playing now.
Washington State.
Washington State. I know. I couldn't tell you. I was shocked Washington State was a tournament team. I had no idea that was a thing. They're a 7 seed. And then Iowa State, you want to talk about a team that loses when they shouldn't lose. Mm-hmm. Iowa State does that in the tournament. So we'll finish it up with running through, before we get to our national champs, let's just run through each SEC team and you tell me how far they're going in this tournament. We've already both said we've got 4-seeded Auburn in the Final Four.
Correct.
The next SEC team, 8-seed Mississippi State, open against Michigan State, North Carolina would be next.
I have them beating Michigan State but losing to North Carolina.
Okay, I have them losing to Michigan State because Tom Izzo usually wins in March.
Okay.
4-seeded Alabama gets Charleston, then the St. Mary's Grand Canyon winner, and then it would be probably Carolina.
So this is going to be my biggest reach in my bracket here. I've got St. Mary's going all the way to the Final Four. So I've got them beating Alabama in the second round there.
Okay. I've got Alabama to the Sweet 16 losing to Carolina. Next, no more SEC teams over there. That's weird. Second seeded Tennessee, 15 seed St. Peter's. We already know you have them losing to Colorado State in round two.
Correct.
Okay. I have got Tennessee to the regional final, the all-time underachiever regional final. Tennessee loses to Purdue, and Purdue makes the Final Four. I hate that, but that's – well, because, look, I have a general – I picked McNeese to beat Gonzaga in the first round. I have a general rule that I will not pick Kansas past the Sweet 16. Mm-hmm. South Carolina's not going anywhere. Oregon's not going anywhere. So it came down to Tennessee, Creighton, or Purdue, and I picked Purdue because I don't know why not. Okay, the other one, seventh-seeded Florida playing, I don't know, they play somebody that wins tonight. Mm-hmm. And then would theoretically play Marquette.
So I have Florida going all the way to the Sweet 16, but then losing to Kentucky. And Kentucky moving on to the Elite Eight.
I have neither Florida nor Kentucky in the Sweet 16.
Holy moly.
I have Texas Tech beating Marquette in the Sweet 16. So out of that particular pod. Mm-hmm. Last one, most important one.
Yeah.
The Trev Alberts matchup. 9-seed Texas A&M, 8-seed Nebraska. Can Nebraska both beat Texas A&M and win the first NCAA tournament game in school history?
No, they cannot. I've got Texas A&M defeating the Cornhuskers.
Texas A&M beats Nebraska 40-39 in the Trev Alberts. So, all right, last thing, Final Four National Champ. What do you got?
Okay, I've got Auburn over St. Mary's, and then Houston over Purdue, and then I have Houston winning it all, defeating Auburn in the national championship game.
Okay, I've got Houston over Purdue, Arizona over Auburn, Houston over Arizona. That is what I came to based on my 14 minutes of watching college basketball this year.
All right.
So there we go. Freeway Jared is in with you with St. Mary's in the Final Four. Oh, no, wait. He says Seacal.
I got to look that up. I didn't know they had an injury.
Got to do some research. All right. We're going to let you go do your research. We're going to bring Gerard in to talk a little football. We'll talk to you later, man.
Well, does Gerard have a pick for the Final Four?
Oh, yeah. Gerard, you got Final Four picks, man?
I filled out a bracket yesterday. I'm not going to lie. I forgot most of who's in it. I know Houston's in there. I know North Carolina's in there. I literally forgot the other two. So I'm not even going to say another team because I don't even know where they rank in the regions or whatever. I'll mess it up. I got to look at it later.
Mizzou's not in it. We can tell you that.
All
right. You know, Drew, have a good one, man.
Sounds good.
All right. So I'm going to switch gears. Once again, want to remind you, brought to you by our friend James Carlton at State Farm Insurance. You can check him out at carltoninsurance.net. His information is running across the bottom of the screen all day long if you're watching on YouTube. Gerard, we talked to Eli Drinkwitz today. That video is on our front page. It's on YouTube. I thought it was pretty interesting stuff. He had a lot to say about, you know, kind of the program as a whole. And he is he's not shying away from expectations. I mean, he said, I don't see any glaring holes on our team, and I don't see any reason we can't stay at this level of success for a while.
I mean, this is what the blue blood teams usually, this is their floor, really, you know, where they can go into the portal, and it's BPA, you know, best player available situation. He talked about how this time, I guess right after spring camp, is different than it was a year ago because he didn't have an offensive line coach, you know, coaching the spring game. There was tons of questions going into spring ball. There were still a ton of questions after spring ball. I feel like, I just wrote about that in Four Down Territory, how you didn't know what defensive end was going to look like. You definitely didn't know what quarterback was going to look like, the offensive line, and all that stuff is shored up. So he said they will be aggressive in the portal. He said they don't have 85 scholarships yet, so it's not – it's a little bit more than I was thinking, though, because I didn't really know where the scholarship was, you know, where the numbers were. But yeah. I just assumed, okay, they seem happy with all the positions for the most part, and they'll do BPA. But he seems like he's like, we're going to be really aggressive when we look. is what he was.
Yeah, I think we have him at 83 scholarships. That could be off one or two, one way or the other. That's our best guess. I think they'll look for an offensive lineman. I would not be shocked to see him go look for another pass rusher, maybe another defensive back, even though Drink seemed pretty high on the defensive backs. But I think that's about it now that they've got Drew Pine. We're going to have 6 months to break down the season and all that. So I don't think there's a need to do that. But I did think it was noticeable that I think I would define him today as comfortable and confident in his team without being like arrogant about it.
Right. And which, again, that's the perfect spot for most teams. That's where you want to be, where you can say, if we don't get nothing in the portal, we're cool. But if we do get something in the portal, you know, that's great too. that's funny, Freeway Jerry. He says, me and Kirby Moore share 9 hats.
There you go. It's Gerard's day to wear the black Nike. SEC comes out this afternoon, says, hey, man, nobody in these rooms can agree on anything. We don't really want to change anything. So the 2025 schedule is just the 2024 schedule with things reversed.
Yep. They say copy and paste.
I guess that's fine. I don't know. I mean, to me, like, what's the point in having 16 teams in a league if you're just like, yeah, we have 16 teams in the league. We don't have divisions, but these 8 teams play the other 8 teams all the time. Like, what are we doing?
I don't know. I think they could have found a way to, if they were going to do this, they could have just maybe every other year. So maybe they would have got, you know, 8 different opponents or whatever the math works out to be, or I guess
7 different.
Yeah.
It's 8. You're right.
Is it 7 or 8?
It's 8. Everybody plays 8 league games. Yeah.
Okay. So they could have had the 8 they have this year. And then maybe you do the inverse of it in 26. But for 25, you got a new set, maybe something like that, because this, it just seems repetitive. But I know Missouri fans should be happy. I'm thinking Drink has got to be over the moon.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's good for Missouri. But if I'm Oklahoma, I'm coming into this league. My first 2 years, I now get Auburn, LSU, Ole Miss, Missouri. By the way, when Ole Miss and Missouri are top 10 teams, Alabama, South Carolina, Tennessee. Meanwhile, I'm looking at Texas getting Arkansas, A&M, Vandy, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi State. I'm going, I don't know about this thing, man. I might just go back and see if Oklahoma State wants to get together and play a 6-game series next year.
Oh, man. Well, I was about to say sucks to suck. I mean, that's what that situation comes down for them. But you want to join the SEC, you know, gotta take your you gotta see if you can stack up. So
The other guy I'm not real happy if I am today is Billy Napier. You just gave me a second straight year of Georgia, Mississippi State, Tennessee, Texas, Kentucky, LSU, Ole Miss, A&M. And, like, look, I know there's no, like, easy schedules in this league, right? But the teams that are mad about this are the ones that have hard schedules in 2024. They're going, wait, man, 2024 was brutal, but we thought at least maybe 2025 we're getting something easy. Or easier, and now we're just getting the hard stuff again.
I mean, you said there's no such thing as easy schedules. You're right, but Missouri scheduling.
Right. I mean, Missouri schedule, if you're going to be in the SEC, it's an easy schedule. But there's still a lot of Big 12, ACC, Mountain West, whatever teams that have a lot easier schedules than that.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure.
Yeah, so, yeah, obviously, the SEC, like, yes, it is easy for the SEC. It doesn't. But the SEC doesn't offer easy schedules. Really, what this whole thing is just the SEC going, hey, we're just going to keep voting in 8 conference games a year until somebody puts in a rule that forces us to play 9. Because right. I don't think they want to play 9.
To be honest, it's been a year since I was – yeah, it was around about a year ago that I was doing the what if the – what
the permanent rivals, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot what the other one is. I'm sure once you say it, it'll click to me, but I can't think of it right now. It was 2 formats they were deciding
between. Yeah, well, it was either going to be 1 permanent rival and 8 rotating teams, or 3 permanent rivals and 6.
Okay, there we go. Yeah.
And but I mean, the whole thing to me right now is this is SEC coaches going, No, our league's good. All we got to do is play 8 games. We'll go schedule 4 blood donors. We'll get 4 teams in the playoff. Why would we play more if there's not a rule that says we have to play more?
Yeah. To be honest, what they have now, to me, isn't terrible. I like the, you know, force them to play another, I guess, P4 team. But I think there needs to be a little bit more to go with that because Missouri plays Boston College this year. I don't know what Boston College did last year, to be honest. I couldn't tell you. But I think there needs to be
some quit to go to the NFL. That's all I know.
There needs to be something that the P4 team you're playing has got to be like top 60 in the FBS. Or so. I don't know how you do. It's got to be something where it's just not – because you. I feel like there's ways to get around.
Well, but there's two problems with that. First of all, if you tell everybody in the SEC you have to play a top 60 team, then who do the non-top 60 teams play? Like, somebody got to play those teams. And second of all, these games are scheduled like 4 and 5 years in advance. Like, yeah, when Missouri originally scheduled, like, they've got Colorado scheduled in 2030. I don't know if Colorado, if Deion Sanders is going to have Colorado number one, or if Deion's going to be fired and they're going to be 3 coaches down the road in 2030. I don't know what the hell they'll be then.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
well,
I'm a fan of 9 conference games and the Power 4 team in the non-con, but that's because I like seeing good games. I understand if your goal is win games, get bonuses, make the playoff. Yeah, you want 8, no question.
Yeah, you know how we feel that first month of that first 4 games. It's Murray State. But like Boston College is up in there. Not a fun schedule.
UMass and somebody else terrible.
Trying to figure out what's the first 4 to start, because I feel like UMass is a little bit later, like randomly in the middle.
I got you.
So it's Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College, and Vandy to open. Vandy, to me, only in conference by name. But
So, Freeway Jared said Mark Stoops is scheduling 3 cupcakes and keeping Louisville. Read Missouri's non-conference schedule again real quick.
We got Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College, all at home. And then they don't play their first. Yeah, they got – and UMass October 12th. Go ahead.
Yeah, my point is Mark Stoops scheduling 3 cupcakes in Louisville. That's like – miles better than Missouri's. Missouri doesn't get to bitch about anybody's non-conference schedule being too easy this year. Buffalo, UMass, Murray State, and Boston College. Come on, guys.
You don't get to crochet at
anybody's non-conference schedule. And then, oh, by the way, you get into the SEC and you avoid the toughest things there, too.
If you look at this 24 schedule, so not only do they, you know, start with the cupcakes, they should be 4-0 when they go into their first, you know,
at A&M
bye week.
Yeah.
So that A&M game, your first road game, isn't until October 5th. So you're going from the end of August through September, all at home to start. So there's really no excuse. And then they avoid LSU, Tennessee, missing a couple more, Georgia and Texas. You're avoiding all the.
Don't play Ole Miss.
That's another team.
This is a 1991 Bill Snyder non-conference schedule.
Oh man,
next year.
This is, and then you get to spin the block and basically do it again next year. There is no. To be honest, barring injury, there is no reason. It shouldn't be a top 12 team to me.
You know, and in 2025, so you want to know Missouri's non-conference schedule in 2025?
Kansas.
At Miami, Ohio, Louisiana, and UMass. It's the return game. They got to play at UMass. So point being – it better be 2026 before I see any Missouri fans laughing at anybody else's non-conference schedule. Because if Missouri ain't 8-0 in the non-conference in the next 2 years, something went wrong.
Correct. At Miami, Ohio. Where is that?
Oxford, like, Ohio.
My dad's from Cleveland. I couldn't tell you where Oxford is. That's new to me.
I think it's in the South Beach of Ohio, Miami.
Okay, so maybe it sounds closer towards Cincy. Maybe I don't know.
I totally made it up. I have
no idea. I peeked.
But look, Ben Roethlisberger ain't walking through that door and suiting up for Miami, Ohio.
Definitely not. But a road game is what's killing me.
Yeah, and we'll see. Maybe they'll get out of that. I don't know. I don't know what the situation is. But at least that's a team. That's a MAC team. It's better than playing at UMass. I know UMass is a MAC team now, but whatever. So anyway, 2025 schedule's out. I don't know. I guess pro day on Friday. Draft's about a month away. Is that about right?
Something like that, yeah.
April 25th, I think, yeah.
Something like that. They said they got 16 players, and we're going to be at the pro day or participating in the pro day. Obviously, the 8 at the combine are the big ones. I figured he wasn't going to answer my question, but I know they're still talking to these guys and helping them and letting them use the trainers and all that. I asked about Ennis Rakestraw and Cody Schrader just a little, see what else he could give us. And he just said, their agents, understandably, can answer all that stuff. And they said that we'll get to talk to guys at Pro Day who want to speak, basically. Right. So if I go up to someone and they're just like, nah, then that is what it is.
Here's the most common response when you ask for an interview at Pro Day. Yeah, I got to go talk to these teams. I'll be right back. And then an hour and a half later, you're sitting in the facility and those dudes walked out a back door somewhere. So, but hey, I'll be interested. I would assume with a couple potential first round guys that all 32 teams are going to have somebody there on Friday, but it'll be interesting to see how many teams are there.
There's going to be a lot of teams there anyway, just because of how many players could be selected. Because I remember last year, what was it at this point? McGuire and Coleman.
Yeah, that was about all.
I think
Isaiah was the only guy that got drafted last year, right?
Yeah, and then Coleman signed as a UDFA. I wonder if he's still on the Jags, though. I'm not sure of that. But
here's one for you. Harrison Meavis to the Chiefs at pick 32. I'll tell you this. If that happens, that's the ultimate Brett Veach just going, F it, we got 15 at quarterback. It doesn't matter what else we do.
I know Sean is just being funny. It does something to me.
I kind of like it.
It'd
be kind of funny.
No, not when the other Harrison just made 95% of his field goals and should have been first team all pro.
It would be kind of funny, though.
No.
I want him to draft Meavis as the third tight end. He can replace Blake Bell. I'm in. Harrison Meavis, pick 32, Kansas City. Let's go.
No, we're not doing
it. So, we'll have some stuff from Pro Day. We'll have some leftover stuff here from Eli today. That's on our front page. I don't know. Anything else you want to mention or talk about, Gerard? Anything exciting?
No, we're getting into the off season, so got to start using our thinking caps a little bit, but yep. I think we're all good for that.
It's content creation season, no question. So we will have plenty of that going on. Portals open in basketball, be open in football in a couple weeks. Want to remind you once again to reach out to our guy, James Carlton, at State Farm in Webster Groves. If you live in Missouri or Illinois, check with him on home auto insurance, carltoninsurance.net. He can get you life insurance too, 314-961-4800. Get in touch with James. Tell him you heard about him on Power Mizzou. He's going to hook you up with a little NIL information for Mizzou and hopefully get you a good deal on your insurance. Appreciate you guys hanging around, and we'll talk to you next time.